through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into Tom, Jake, and Stacy, a Tuesday edition. Hope everybody had a great Memorial Day weekend. So there's a topic here we're going to get to in just a second that we've only sort of touched on a little bit, and it has to do with what John Clayton wrote last week about the Seahawks being interested in signing Antonio Brown. We'll get to that in just a minute. I want to tell you, though, that coming up at 12:30, Mike Salk will join us, talk a little bit about the golf event that went on over the weekend, and then we'll get some insider perspective on Carlos Hyde, the newest Seahawk running back from someone down in Houston. Coming up at 2, we're going to do something a little bit different. All off-season long, we did draft prospect profiles, things like that. We're going to do a segment called Know Your Seahawk, and we're going to go through every Seahawk, well, at least all the important ones, and take you, hopefully, right up to the time where we should have a season, knock on wood, and we'll give you a little dossier on every single Seahawk there is. Okay, back to this idea about the Seahawks and them having interest in Antonio Brown. I just want to read a little bit here from Clayton's article last week. According to sources, Wilson would love to add Antonio Brown. Brown is also close with backup cornerback Geno Smith, whose one-year contract with the Seahawks was finalized yesterday. Now, Clayton goes on to say a couple of things like, don't expect the Seahawks to move on this anytime soon. Like, if it's going to happen, we're talking late July or August. Okay, so let's keep that in mind. Now, this is a guy in Antonio Brown, Jake and Stacy, that has many a legal entanglement. We've got issues where he was attacking a delivery driver. We've got rape allegations. Can I even read this stuff on the air? I mean, you know what? I will real quick. On September 10th of 2019, Brown's former trainer, Brittany Taylor, filed a lawsuit alleging on September 16th, a second woman accused him of sexual misconduct. So let's just leave it right there. Okay, I'll start with you, Jake. When you see stuff like this, now this is all alleged. I'm not sure where it is in the legal system. But as a football fan, can you separate what you think is good for the Seahawks as a straight, let's say you're the GM, can you separate that from Antonio Brown, the person, and what he's being accused of? I'll tell you straight up, sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. In this case, I definitely cannot.
And I definitely understand that. It is a very tough pill to swallow when you are just following these things and not just the legal troubles that he has had. And that one particular case that you're talking about, Tom, I believe it's in civil court right now. It's not in criminal court, but it's in civil court between him and the victim and defendant here. And I also think that it's also troubling in some of the things that you saw from him on social media, things that he was posting, things that he was going about. Clearly, Antonio Brown was for sure in the wrong state of mind. I don't even know what state of mind he was in during the course of everything that you just talked about, everything that he had done over a 6-8 month period. Right. It was just very sad to watch and see. But to answer your question, yes, you do. As a GM and as a coach, I think there's certain circumstances or certain situations that make you think differently than maybe the public would. And here's a perfect example of that. Pete Carroll back in September, when all these allegations first came out and he was released from the Raiders, this is what Pete Carroll said here in cut number 2.
Who said we did?
You kicked
the tire. We were in on the situation. We knew exactly what was going on. That's what we needed to know. And why wouldn't you? You know, he's a great player. See what's going on. You know, not everything is always as it seems, and you got to check into stuff and figure out what's going on. And you know, I have confidence in John and our guys and ourselves as coaches that we can figure those things out and see what's best. I don't mind getting real close to the edge of it and figuring it out. And he was headed to New England. He was going.
So they you know, Pete Carroll right there very clearly said that he doesn't mind getting close to the edge of it. They were doing their due diligence. They were investigating the situation, where it was at. It doesn't mean that they were going to go for it, but they definitely looked into it. And I think at this point in time right now, they are looking into it, that they are, you know, kicking the tires on it yet again and seeing where it currently stands in terms of Antonio Brown's legal troubles, his issues. Is it going to affect his playing time this upcoming season potentially? And what would the NFL do? And so with all that being said, guys, I look at Antonio Brown's situation. You hear reports, you know, Russell Wilson wants Antonio Brown. I think there's a lot of back and forth to this conversation, but if you're just asking me and I'm separating those two things in terms of what he has done and where he currently sits and how he can help this football team right now for the Seattle Seahawks, I would say that the Seahawks should sign Antonio Brown, and I wouldn't wait, like John Clayton suggested, till July and August. I would sign him sooner rather than later. So that you have a better understanding as what you're getting from this player and how the league is going to react to it.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time kind of reconciling the two sides of this. On the one hand, Antonio Brown is exactly the kind of weapon Seattle needs to get to a Super Bowl, because I agree that he still can be an elite wide receiver. And it seems much easier for Seattle right now to make the offense elite as opposed to make the defense a top defense when it finished near the bottom of the league, especially without Jadeveon Clowney. But on the other hand, when you look over this timeline of everything he's been through, I mean, outside of just that assault, there's the accused assault of the moving truck driver. There's the menacing text that he sent his accuser. There's the year prior, a domestic dispute. He was sued by like a personal trainer and a chef. There was reckless driving. There was a separate lawsuit for a furniture throwing incident. I mean, there's been a lot of red flags with this guy. And I think that it does make it difficult to then buy John Schneider's statement about a zero tolerance policy for domestic violence. I know that none of these fall directly under domestic violence, maybe as defined by like a personal conduct policy or the law, but there's certainly enough in here that should make any team hesitate. So I'm struggling with how to feel about it. Knowing also that, for instance, the case that was stemming from that September 2019 incident was dismissed in a federal civil lawsuit and is being handled on the state level. So it's like, okay, well, what's going on here? It's still confusing to figure out what's happening. On the other, it's tough, man. I feel like I'm right in between where you guys stand on this. And I know that we're going to get texts saying how awful it is to even consider Brown for a minute. But I see the intrigue of it. It's going to be hard for me to take anything Schneider says seriously.
Yeah, I'll go you one better. Forget about, even if he were an angel, okay, I don't think that they need Antonio Brown to win a Super Bowl.
I do.
I think that the weapons that they have, and by the way, I guess I'm still holding out some hope that they get Josh Gordon. If they went with Gordon, Metcalf, and Lockett, and Olsen, Disley, whatever, I'd be fine with that. I don't think they need Antonio Brown to win a Super Bowl. If you think they need Antonio Brown to win a Super Bowl, then you never thought they were going to win a Super Bowl, because I don't think that this is going to happen. That's one. Two, if they sign Antonio Brown, see, it's different in every case, right? Some cases, I want to wait until the legal system has gone all the way through, and I'm willing to wait while there's just allegations floating around out there. In the case of Antonio Brown, 90% of what he's been accused of has been public.
It's awful.
Some of this stuff he put on Instagram. Now, the rape allegation and the one that I read you there, that's obviously not been public. That's an allegation. But is it so hard to believe that something might have happened there, even if it wasn't all of that? Isn't that still pretty terrible? I mean, that's not so far-fetched that could have happened. So I'm telling you right now, if the Seahawks decide that they want to sign Antonio Brown, I will not root for them, and I will lose a lot of respect for both John Schneider and Pete Carroll, because what you stand for as an organization goes a long way. If I were a Kansas City Chiefs fan, I wouldn't have rooted for Tyreek Hill last year. If ever, you know, the Giants or signed somebody like this, I wouldn't root for them either. Some things are way more important than winning football games. And I think in this case, any team that signs Antonio Brown should be absolutely ashamed of themselves.
Well, and I definitely understand why you would feel that way. Now, I'm here to tell you from a football standpoint, the football reasons as to why it can work out. With Antonio Brown, you sign him to a contract where you are not obligated. There's zero guaranteed money in the situation. You make that very clear from the beginning, and that there is, you know, just like with the New England Patriots, that the first sign of trouble, if there is to be, then you cut the player and you get rid of him. The difference was that the New England Patriots were actually on the hook for some sort of guaranteed money, and the Seattle Seahawks in this situation would not be. And you know, Antonio Brown in this situation, I think that you look at the organization, you look at Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, where Russell is at in his career as a leader, as a quarterback. I think that you add that talent and you talk about, Tom, you say, well, you didn't think that they were a Super Bowl contender if you think Antonio Brown gets you there. I don't. As the roster currently sits, I don't think that they're a Super Bowl team right now, and I think anybody that sits there and honestly, objectively looks at the roster would say the same thing as well. I don't think that they're a Super Bowl team as it sits. They have to make other moves, and if you're not going to make your defense elite, if you're not going to, you know, make moves that are really going to improve the defense, then I think that there's an opportunity here to make the offense elite. The other thing, that the reason why I would say sign Antonio Brown now rather than wait, is because you could sign him in July, August, after you get comfortable with his legal situation, and the NFL can come right and say, hey, we're going to, you know, slap a 6-8 game suspension. To me, then it wasn't even worth the trouble. So now you do it now, you see how the league's going to react, and you can cut bait sooner rather than later, and it doesn't affect your team. So I think that there's multiple reasons as to why it could work out from a football standpoint. I certainly understand why people have an issue with it on a personal standpoint, and I'm one of them.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing here, guys. Like, I don't want to sit here and say that, you know, Antonio Brown is somebody that I look the other way just because of the player. I think there's a ton of stipulations that come together before you make this decision. But the Seahawks are kicking the tires on this situation, and they're doing it for a reason. They're doing it for a couple of different reasons. And one is because they feel like they can win with Antonio Brown, and they can help, and he could potentially help them get to the ultimate goal. And two, they feel that it's a situation that may work out for them in terms of him playing in 2020 or him have a 4-6 game suspension. And okay, so you have Antonio Brown basically as a high ankle sprain, and he's been with your organization in the offseason working out and doing all that stuff. So I could see from a football perspective why this would get done and why it would happen down the line, and I certainly understand why there would be a lot of angst towards this move, and, you know, people saying the same things that Tom's saying right now. But this does remind me of last year with Tyreek Hill and everybody being in uproar about that situation, rightfully so. Rightfully so. And I think people should be in an uproar in two different situations. I don't hear that same conversation happening as much after the Kansas City Chiefs won a Super Bowl.
I don't know. It's just about what you sacrifice to win that, right? Is it worth bringing on someone who has done fundamentally wrong things, like morally wrong things, for a shot at a Super Bowl? It's about, like, what you're sacrificing for that shot, right? I mean, we've talked about
It depends what they are, Stacey. And I don't think – I mean, can you come up, other than murder, can you come up with anything worse than this, what these allegations?
No. No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, you know, we'll talk about the Rams all day, mortgaging their future for the present and it not working. This, to me, is the same kind of conversation. You're mortgaging the culture of your locker room and your reputation, and it depends how much you believe in this person. Maybe they have more belief in him than fans do. I don't know, but it's a big risk to take.
I'd rather miss the playoffs than win with this guy, honestly. Right now, I got three questions.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
God, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Tiger Woods. I didn't watch this over the weekend, this golf matchup that everybody was talking about, but it did seem to put Tom Brady in somewhat of a vulnerable position. Do you guys think that seeing Brady in a vulnerable position will make anybody who doesn't like him more, Jake?
I think sometimes when you get in those situations, that or you thoroughly enjoyed it, right? You were watching that whole front nine and you were like, yes, I want to see Brady fail to no end, right? Seeing somebody who has been so successful for so long, you know, really struggle in that situation on such a national scale, you know, I think it was very vulnerable for him. And the way that he was able to respond to it with his sweet shot that he had, his approach shot on the seventh hole, and then playing better in the back nine. But yeah, I think it warms people up to a guy like Tom Brady if you maybe had hard feelings towards him and didn't really get to see how he interacted with people. This was a very unique opportunity to get that.
People being bad at things makes me like them more. Period. I just, typically people are more likable when they just fail at more things. It's something about it is just incredibly relatable. Nothing about Tom Brady is relatable until he just performed poorly to start all of that off and then split his pants. And I was like, wow, we are the same. Me and him in so many ways.
Next.
Number 2.
How do you guys feel about pumping crowd noise into stadiums where there's no crowds? This is something that kind of sounds silly, but I understand why, like, the need to do it from a television product standpoint. Otherwise, it's going to sound like golf, is it not?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell from a broadcasting standpoint, and the thing is that we haven't had any experience. We have had zero experience with something like this. So, Tom, I have no idea what this would be like. I guess I would just be curious to see what both situations ended up being like. I'd see a game without any crowd noise and see one where they pump in crowd noise and see how I feel. But I think I would lean more towards wanting the pumped-in crowd noise just to give you some semblance of an actual game feel. I just feel like it would be really, really sterile. It'd either be that, or you have to, like we talked about before, I think it was last week, you know, getting the players to give you more access, allowing them to be more mic'd up so that you can hear more banter, more things happening, because without it, it would just feel really sterile.
I want pumped in crowd noise for sure. Like, no doubt. I'm 100% pro crowd noise, which, like, maybe some players would be upset about because they're like, man, this is our opportunity to finally hear calls, or this is our opportunity to, you know, hear what they're doing on the other line of opposite the line of scrimmage. But I don't know. It's just already when you go to training camp or Seahawks practices, even without fans there, there's music. I don't think I've seen a Seahawks practice that's been silent in like 5 years of covering this team.
Do you think that they are going to pump crowd noise into this? Okay, never mind. I was going to say my first thought was that maybe a better idea would be just to pump crowd noise into the audio mix that goes out for the TV broadcast as opposed to doing it in the main stadiums. But
I want it there. Yeah.
You want it there. Okay. Next.
Yeah. Number 3.
Do you think that Russell Wilson is at his best when plays are designed for him or when the play breaks down and he has to improvise? We talk about let Russ cook, build the team more around him, build it more for him. To me, I mean, you could do that. I'm not opposed to that. But to me, Russell is still at his best when the play breaks down and he needs to just improvise and make something happen, Jake.
I would agree with you on that, in the sense that when you talk about, like, unique special traits that one player has over another, this was the X factor in terms of what made him great. I think that his improvisational skills are incredible. But I would say designing things for him where they're open and where things are happening, for any quarterback, you'd rather be in that position. I don't want Russell Wilson to have to go to that bag, you know, that bag of tricks multiple times a game, you know, 5-6 times a game. I'd rather him only have to do that, you know, maybe twice a game. And so limiting those situations, I think, are really key. And Russell's had to do it more often than pretty much every other quarterback in the NFL over his 8 seasons in the NFL.
Yeah, it's fun to see a quarterback like Wilson or Mahomes, who is capable of turning nothing into something. It is really fun to see it, and we play those moments as highlights, and we talk about them forever. If I say Russell Wilson against the Cardinals, you know, making something happen, you already know that I'm talking about the play in which he, like, drops back in the backfield and then throws to Doug Baldwin, who leaps to make a catch against the sidelines and almost runs it in for a touchdown. I don't even have to describe it. You guys already know what I'm saying, because those moments stand out. But at the same time, there are great moments that are executed perfectly. And I think more often than not, those are the ones that help you move down the field and score. Like, you can only pull a rabbit out of the hat so many times before you're just a completely dysfunctional offense. Like, you've got to be able to execute your plays. And I think the Seahawks are able to do that. It's just the ones where Russell Wilson's running around doing magic are the ones that stand out.
I said before, I will not root for the Seahawks if they sign Antonio Brown. I'll also lose some respect for Pete and John if they decide they want somebody who's accused of such terrible things on their team. Somebody retweeted me, Zizu Coog, saying, does this guy, meaning me, know that Frank Clark played for the Seahawks? See, I wouldn't equate, first of all, I don't think you can equate any case to another case. I think they're all different. But I definitely would not equate Frank Clark to this one. In the case of Frank Clark, it was one incident. There was less evidence, a lot less evidence, and it could have been a misunderstanding. In the case of Antonio Brown, his exploits are a mile long with a lot more evidence. Okay, specific evidence and specific accusations. If the Seahawks were to go out of their way right now to sign Antonio Brown just in the name of winning, I will lose a lot of respect for them. A ton. Mike Sox next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
I'm really glad to have Mike Salk here with us on this particular topic of Antonio Brown. I think he's going to give us a great answer, and I have no idea really what he's going to say. But, Mike, we were just talking through it there. Clayton's article from last week, the Seahawks might express some interest in a guy like Antonio Brown who has about a million accusations swirling around his head. How would you feel if the Seahawks went after him?
I'd be extremely disappointed if the Seahawks went after Antonio Brown at this point. Now, there is a difference between having a conversation and exploring and actually signing somebody. And I think John's been very clear about this over the years, and I respect it a lot. I think that as a team in the NFL that allows certain players to be available, even when we think they have done things that maybe should make them unavailable to be signed, I think the Seahawks owe it to themselves and their fans and everybody else to do their due diligence, whether it's somebody we think is onerous or not. Like, I think it's okay. I think you need to go and find out who that person is, what they've done, what the truth of the situation is, how serious it is, whether it's something you believe you could help improve their life and improve the life of people around them. I know Pete Carroll feels strongly about that. So there are situations where I think value can be brought in, or value can be had from them bringing somebody in. I don't think that Antonio Brown is in that boat. I don't think this is a guy with a couple of mixed up situations who's putting himself in the wrong position, but all the while he's really the good guy. I don't think that's the case. And, you know, they dealt with the Frank Clark situation, I think, fairly well. And I think they probably helped improve Frank Clark's life and some of the people who were around Frank Clark. And I don't think that should be forgotten. But while you're sitting here waiting to find out what's going on with Quentin Dunbar, and while Antonio Brown has the kind of allegations against him, and it's not just one, it's a whole slew of them, Tom, as you mentioned, yeah, I'd be extremely disappointed if they actually signed him.
Yeah, and I understand absolutely where you and Tom sit on the whole situation. And, you know, my question is, you know, you look at what Antonio Brown has done. The Seahawks, what if in this, you know, reality that we're talking about, that they do deem that in his situation personally in his life right now, the legal issues that he's having, that he's going through, that he is worth taking that chance on, and it ends up working out well for them, what's going to be your reaction to that? Because Tom said the moment that the Seahawks sign Antonio Brown, he is no longer going to be a fan of them, and he will root against them. What is going to be your stance? Because I see a lot of people saying the same things about Tyreek Hill, and rightfully so. There's nothing about this that isn't right by anybody that's saying negative things about Antonio Brown or Tyreek Hill, but they just won a Super Bowl, and I don't hear that same angst in conversation. That's where it becomes really interesting to me. So what would be your feeling on that?
Yeah, with respect to Tom, and I fully understand that position, that would not be mine. I don't stop rooting for a team because they bring in a guy that I don't think is a good person. Doesn't mean I have to root for Antonio Brown any more than I'd root for Ben Roethlisberger or Tyreek Hill or some of the other guys that you've mentioned that I think aren't great guys and have done things that are really serious crimes and need to be taken even more seriously. The problem I always have, Jake, and this has been a decades-long problem, is I don't believe this should be up to the teams. I don't think that each of the 32 teams who are designed to try to win should have to make a decision on whether or not they're willing to bring in Antonio Brown. I think the league, led by Roger Goodell, who I believe is generally somewhat feckless as a leader, should take him out of consideration. The Seahawks should not be allowed to sign Antonio Brown any more than anybody else should. And I don't think Tyreek Hill should be allowed to play in the league either, because I think it's impossible for these general managers whose jobs depend on whether or not they win or lose to not be, like moths to the flame when it comes to these incredibly talented guys who aren't very good people. And
that's a really good point, because here you're in the situation as a team, and sometimes you do separate those things, right? Like you're in a very different mental space than the public, right? And it doesn't make it right or wrong, but that's kind of somehow sometimes those teams lean in that direction. And I agree with you, Salk, that it should be one of those things where they don't even get to the point where they can even consider it, because they're going, because someone's going to kick the tires.
I'm not going to stop rooting for the Seahawks. But you mentioned, yeah, what if they deem they can make the whole thing work out better? Yeah, maybe they can. But if they do take an enormous risk in signing Antonio Brown and it goes the other way, either he's somewhat problematic in the locker room, which he has had issues with in the past, or there is another incident where he is accused of more domestic violence or any other kind of a crime, it's a huge, huge mess. And it looks bad for Pete, looks bad for John, looks bad for the Allen family, looks bad for Seahawks, the whole organization. I just don't see why it would possibly be worth the risk. If you needed a wide receiver so bad, there are about 9,000 of them who were just draftable, and you didn't take any of them until the seventh round. So if you really needed a wide receiver, you could have gone out and gotten one. You just didn't deem that position to be worthy of it. Why would you now try to solve it with this guy? It doesn't make sense.
How much sway do you think Russell Wilson actually has over whether or not he gets signed? Because we've heard Clayton's report that Russell Wilson loves him and wants him here.
Well, in this case, I hope not that much. Generally, I want Russell to kind of take a little bit more, you know, leadership in some of this. But, you know, I think he's wrong on this one. And if it was important to him to have a wide receiver, the lobbying for that really needed to happen earlier. And unfortunately, maybe it did. And the Seahawks just sort of ignored that. They brought in Jake's buddy, Philip Dorsett, And really, that's been about it for that position. Look, if that is that important to Russell, I think there's more of a big picture conversation about style he's got to have with Pete Carroll in terms of what kind of a style this team is being built around.
I just want to be clear about something, too, because this is actually the first time that I've ever taken the hard line stance, like, oh, I won't root for this team if they sign this guy. I've never said anything like that on the air before, ever.
Mm.
But to me, there's a difference between having a guy who's already on your team, like, say, a Jaron Reed who's accused of X, Y, and Z, and going out of your way to sign an Antonio Brown, creating all this mess that you just talked about, potentially, just because the guy can run fast and catch a ball. I think that NFL teams need to draw a line somewhere in the sand. And you're right, Mike. It shouldn't be left up to them where they're put in that position. But I can just see Pete and Russ and John sitting there saying, boy, look at Antonio go. Like, I'm sorry. There are some things that are more important than winning there. Does that make sense?
It does, and I love your take on it. I mean, I want that to be my take, but I guess I've just seen too many, been around so many different GMs and owners and coaches, et cetera, who say, well, if I don't sign this guy, somebody else is going to sign him, then I'm going to get beat, and then I'm going to get fired. And, you know, maybe they should risk their careers for it. I think there is honor in that. But while I would certainly appreciate them doing that, I don't know that I can necessarily criticize them for not doing it.
Okay, one last question here. Do you think that they're okay at wide receiver? Like, here's the question. We talked about pass rush all offseason long. Do you think that getting Antonio Brown makes a huge difference?
I think they're fine. I don't think it's a position of great strength. I did like watching DK Metcalf jump up onto those mats that were at about his shoulder height. That was pretty ridiculous over the weekend. So, look, I think they're a decent wide receiving core, and I think they're good enough to win with it if they're able to fix the defense. And if you're not able to fix the defense, then you better score some more points, and maybe they do need some help at wide receiver. So they need help somewhere. I don't know whether wide receiver would be my choice, but if it's the most most easily upgradable position, then I think I understand why you would try to do it.
Mike, terrific stuff. Love your takes on all this stuff. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, guys. See ya.
Is this the most important week in baseball in the last 30 years? Well, one guy says so. We'll talk about it next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
All right, guys, on the lighter side of the news, might we have a baseball season or might we not have a baseball season? We're going to hear from Jeff Passan here in just a second. He was on with Mike Greenberg's show, Get Up, just this morning, talking about the importance of this week for Major League Baseball, not only for this season and whether or not we have one, but for the image of baseball going forward. I just want to say first, guys, and I want to get your take on this. I think once COVID began and we were all quarantined, and it took a little while for this thing to kind of get across the country, it made its way across to the East Coast. I kind of resigned myself to the fact that we may not have a baseball season. We're not going to get NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, anything like that. Now, that may happen with the NBA and NHL. We'll see. In fact, we're going to get an update from NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman coming up in a little bit. But as far as baseball, would I be mad if they didn't have a season? Yeah. But I wouldn't be as upset as I was in 94 when they had a strike because it was strictly a labor issue. This right now is a little bit more complex than that. And cramming the decision into just a couple weeks, I guess I'd be understanding as to why they didn't get it done. Stacey, what's your thought on this?
I consider myself a pretty pragmatic person, but I think I've still been holding out hope that they would get this done. And not even hope, I think I've been kind of expecting a version of a season to happen. And I don't know why, but hearing this news We were talking kind of before the show of like, well, how would you feel if a season didn't happen? And like you said, you're like, oh, I don't know that I'd be that surprised. I didn't realize until that moment that I was expecting it to happen. And I think why I'm disappointed, why I would be disappointed, more than disappointed, that sounds patronizing. I'd be upset, not just for not having a season in 2020, but for the repercussions of what that would mean for baseball moving forward, which it's hard to even put into words the kind of effect that that would have. And so it would almost be scary. I mean, for lack of a better word, I'd be afraid.
Yeah. To me, there's a big difference between, you know, getting in the mindset of, well, I don't think it's possible that the season is going to happen and eventually it doesn't happen, right? Like, to me, that's completely different. But when you have the knowledge that a baseball season very much can happen and that if they just come to an agreement, baseball will come back and there will be games played, to me, that's a whole different ballgame. And when you get to that point where it just becomes, it comes down to labor dispute, it comes down to money, and whether it's the owners or the players not able to come to that agreement, it's a massive disappointment, and it is a massive miss by Major League Baseball. And I think that I would be upset. I mean, it would be a game changer to be able to have live sporting events. I mean, the match, right? And we'll talk about this later. The match between Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning, a charity golf tournament. That was the most watched cable golf event in golf history. I mean, that's insane, right? So there's a huge opportunity here for Major League Baseball, knowing that it is, you know, it is deemed okay to get back to sports again for Major League Baseball. I would be very, very bummed.
Let's hear cut three from Jeff Passan on with Mike Greenberg. Get up this morning. Go ahead.
I believe this is going to be the most consequential week in Major League Baseball in the last quarter century, dating back to the 1994 strike. Now the Major League Baseball season hangs in the balance, and it's going to come down to MLB and the Players Association figuring out how to split the revenue that they generate in 2020. And that is not going to be an easy thing to do. But as we have said on this show, on SportsCenter, everywhere for 2 months now, this is the moment where it gets important. And we're going to see if these two sides that have been at loggerheads for a long time now can come together and bring baseball back in 2020.
Here's the difference with that, okay? I agree with Passan in that it could be the most important moment for baseball since the 94 strike, only because we haven't really had anything else to challenge that in that time. The difference, though, is with COVID, none of this is anybody's fault. Like, COVID just kind of happened to us, right? It's certainly not the union's fault, and it's not Major League Baseball's fault. So if it comes out that we can't have baseball because of all this other stuff that they can't agree on, I'm not sure that I'm pointing the fingers at one side or the other. Like, COVID happened to the owners. COVID happened to the players. If they can't work it out because the situation is just too complex, it's a terrible, terrible shame. And I'll be disappointed, but I think the rational part of me understands that. This isn't just a strike where it's like all about money. This happened, and now they have to figure out a way to navigate their way through a situation that they've never been in before in a very short amount of time. So the reasonable part of me understands that, Stacey.
Yeah, and I know that, and I am not one of the people that will place this on the shoulders of the players if this doesn't happen at all. But I know that that conversation's there, and I just question whether or not I have trust in owners that that part of the negotiations will meet players halfway, because it's just a more invisible party, and so you don't have to face as much criticism because there's not really a face to link that to sometimes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and yeah, it definitely does, for sure. To me, I'm in the side of, look, you could pick sides, players, owners, all of that, to me, I blame all parties. Like, I genuinely do. I would blame all parties in this situation. Would I put more, you know, blame towards one? I probably would agree with Stacey that I put more blame towards the owners. We'll have to see what the proposal is when it's all said and done before we, you know, make those types of decisions. But baseball, if they can come back, need to find a way to make it happen between ownership, between the players' union. I really think that this is something that is right there for the taking for them to be able to get back to. And it would be unfortunate if labor dispute is what it came down to.
Yeah.
Labor dispute. Oy. You have to admit, though, like the amount of time that they've had to figure this out really doesn't seem sufficient, A. B, you know what? My gut feeling, I think that they will figure this out. I think that, I mean, like, you can say that the owners are an invisible party that won't have to face this. But you know what? Like you said, if they don't have a season, it will be a disaster beyond just 2020. And the owners will then be paying for it, whether they end up doing that publicly or not. They will have lost so much money anyway if they don't have a season. I mean, this isn't really a case where they can look at it and just say, oh, let's just cut our losses and not have a season because the players are being, you know, because they're stonewalling us. They need to get some money in there somehow, whether there's fans in there or not. In fact, I read today, normally the owners would recoup something like $10 billion. And if they went forward from here without fans in the stands, they'd get like $2 or $3 billion. Like, that's not something that they can just pass up. I think that it would behoove them to make this work for the players and get on with it, regardless of whatever shell of a season we've got. All right, we've got a new running back on this team. We've got Carlos Hyde in the house. He's got a torn labrum. I wasn't really happy to hear that after we went off the air on Friday. So we'll hear a little bit more about him next. We'll go down to Houston, somebody who covers the Texans for ESPN. By the way, remember, you now have radios in your home, smart speakers. Tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. We're talking Carlos Hyde next, 710 ESPN Seattle.